saw the there was a graphic that had like a long line. It was an infographic of how projects get done. So it was like on the left end, you know, project assigned, and then on the far right end was deadline. Then it was divided into two parts with like 95% of the time from the left towards the deadline as open and, you know, marked as goofing off.
Yeah.
And then the last little 5% of the time, all the work done while crying.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko. James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
And so let's pick it up there. That one's picking up there.
Yeah. So we have, hopefully, whatever we say will be recorded. Have you lost recordings before?
I have.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking.
Typically we do, we have the redundancy we record on, over the telephone.
A local device as well?
Yeah, and then record over GarageBand. That's how we've done it. But since we switched to Uber conference, it's just over the phone, so.
There's some movie with the comedian, and he had a podcast in it, and they lost the recording, and his partner went crazy.
Oh, no.
Joel and I lost a recording with a American sitcom star. So disappointing. And then a week or so later, we recorded with a comedian who was just terrible. We decided to just cut the whole thing.
Oh, that's funny. You know, Kevin Rogers, one of his best friends, is the guy from Mike and Molly.
Right.
It's a, you know, big show in the States. So, you know what we should do is, we've been doing a Perfect Life podcast, me and Richard Rossi, and I think that the things that we've been doing this week is really like, I think that's the biggest thing, because we've had sort of incidental conversations about marketing. But it hasn't really been the focus. You know, I think what was really evident through the week is the total focus on lifestyle.
Living.
And that's, so I'll tell you my reflections on the week, because it's kind of out of my normal routine, a little similar, you know, your routine while you're here is probably, you know, 80% the same as what we
had this week. Much closer to my normal routine with slight subtleties.
And so this was a confirmation for me. One of the things that I've been playing around with is having a zone approach to my day. And by that I mean having, bringing it down into sections of the day that are reserved for certain things. And I've just had at every turn kind of confirmation that that's on the right path. I was having a conversation with Taki Moore at my Breakthrough Blueprint event, and he was saying that, I think it was Philip Stark, the designer, that their voicemail, when you call their office, says, "Hello, you've reached Philip Stark. At Philip Stark, the mornings are for thinking and the afternoons are for doing, so we will return your call in the afternoon." And that, if you call there in the morning, kind of thing. And that is pretty interesting, because Eben Pagan and I have talked about this, that the longer you can stretch out your day without the world knowing you're there, the more
exactly.
The better it is for you to stay on track, you know?
And I'm thinking that when you travel, you have big spots where your traditional market are literally asleep.
For me, that was really, like, I noticed, so I started the tour. I went to London Well, I started in Orlando, Toronto, London. I was in the UK for 3 weeks, and what I was sharing with you that I found delightful about that is that they're 5 hours ahead. So I would be, you know, it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon before anybody in my office or in on the East Coast of the United States was even awake. And that just felt so luxuriously my own time in a way, you know? And it's kind of odd because I don't really have a lot of appointments or any expectations of my time, but even just that conscious awareness that people are, you know, it is sort of traditional business hours.
And I think that has been a good advantage for me with my team starting 3 hours after me.
Yeah.
Is I get the mornings to myself. And by far the biggest change in my entire business zone structure is to work on my own stuff before I go for the inbox. So I used to be there before breakfast, checking, see what catastrophic things had happened overnight. But now I'm not likely to see my emails till mid-morning.
So that's something that I'm sort of playing around with. Like, that is something, my sort of natural thing is to wake up, and I think like most people, my iPhone is right there, and you know, the first thing is to pick it up, and there you see whatever's come in, you know, you do your little it's funny, Evan and I call it the OCD loop, where you kind of, you know, check your Facebook, check your email, check some stats or something, you know, that whatever's important, and then see what's going on. And then by the time you've done that first loop, you're back to checking Facebook again to see what else has come up.
And as soon as you touch the phone, your brain's switched on for the day.
Right.
I think I sort of rationalized it that, well, I've just been asleep for 8 hours.
Yeah.
What's another hour or two?
Well, that's where I'm getting.
Who's to say I wasn't sleeping for 10?
Yeah. Well, Joe Polish, he's... Yeah, we were talking about this too, but he doesn't keep his phone in the bedroom at all. He keeps it downstairs because he knows that if it's there, he'll be waking up in the middle of the night and checking it and texting.
That's what I do. I leave my phone plugged into my computer.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. There's no technology for me once I'm go for sleeping time.
Yeah. So I've found, you know, so talking about that zone thing, one of the things Richard and I have talked about is, you know, a perfect day is part of a perfect life. And, you know, one of the things that we've had conversations about is, you know, if you could sleep any 8 hours, you know, without regard to social norms or anything like that, what would be the 8 hours that you would sleep? What would be your natural?
Well, see, I used to think it was different to what I did think, because I've always felt that I can sleep whatever hours I want anyway.
Me too, right.
So I was doing the 2 or 3 a.m. to 10:30, 11 a.m. stretch. But when I shifted to the sea and I had the sun touching me on the face first thing in the morning with no blinds, I'm now go to bed at 10:30, wake up at 7, sort of.
Right.
You know, 6:30, 7, 7:30. Yeah. And that's now been far more productive for me, especially when my routine is actually to cruise down to the surf shop, get a coffee, come back, and then I hit my first projects,
right,
whether it's an appointment with someone else or something I need to do for my business.
Yeah,
that's the highest priority, and only after that do I see what the rest of the world has for me.
Right. And that's kind of where I'm headed now. Like, when I go back, because I haven't been back in Florida since May. I left middle of May. I went up to I was in Toronto for 3 weeks, and then the UK for 3 weeks, and then back to Toronto. And I've been on the road since literally May 18th, and I will be back in. I'm flying back to the States today. Going to go see Frank Kern for few days, and then go up to Toronto, and then go to Connecticut for Brian Kurtz Titans event, and then back to Florida. So September 13th, so that's June, July, August, 4 months I've been literally on the road. And, you know, so the interesting thing now is seeing the similarities in the way that my natural rhythm goes now. Like, even across lots of different time zones, I kind of fall into that rhythm of kind of 11 o'clock to 7 o'clock is, and I've found that even here, like, that's kind of been our routine this week, which is delightful. It's very similar to my routine when I'm in Florida, except being here in Manly, being able to wake up and just go downstairs and walk somewhere. You know, we had our pick of lots of different great cafes, lots of really great cafes and restaurants. So, you know, we kind of got into that routine of
up and out.
Yeah, up and basically out and go for breakfast.
My first goal of the day is to get out of the house.
Yeah.
And then I'll always have an afternoon get out of the house.
It's, yeah.
It's a minimum of twice a day.
Right. So we kind of got into a three times a day routine because so I was experimenting with that. We'd go for coffee, then we'd come back by, say, 9 or 9:30, and then, you know, get together again for lunch. And so I had that, those mornings were really great for me, just being.
And it was a non-car week for you.
No car, yeah.
You know, so it's really rare to drive.
Yeah, which is fun, you know. Like, so I'm really enjoying that. I noticed that, you know, sharing with you, living at the Four Seasons now in Toronto, being in Yorkville and waking up, getting out, and literally everything that I could want is 500 paces away.
Village living,
city village living. I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing. And even Manly just takes that, you know, and continues it, but adds kind of that beach vibe to it, where
we've got beach and then harbor.
Yeah.
And city access.
Well, that was the thing. So yesterday when we got up, you know, yesterday we were able to, you know, walk. It's a, I mean, 15 minutes to the
maybe
to the ferry,
10, yep.
10 to 15 minutes to the ferry, and we had to move quickly because
we timed it
just perfectly.
Yeah.
And we got on the ferry, and then 30 minutes on this beautiful ferry ride into Sydney Harbour, and you're at Circular Quay, which is like the city living right there. And so that, and still no car. You're just walking and there. And so I'm realizing that's a difference than, so when I'm in Winter Haven, it's kind of more spread out. You can't really walk anywhere, but the routine is still the same. I get up and I go to Cafe Latte, and then I go to my office. And but so the change now for me going forward is I really am gonna strive for the no electronics or whatever till 1 o'clock. That'll be my ideal, I think. Like, if I could get up, get walking, get, you know, get exercise, get to the cafe, have breakfast, go to my office, and have, you know, that first zone from, say, you know, 10:30 to 1 as just uninterrupted on my highest priority. It was a funny thing because I was with Robin Sharma in Newport Beach. And then I did a lot of reading and looking at blogs and stuff. And I saw an article from him on 99U.com about, you know, his 90-90 challenge or something like that, where spending the first 90 minutes of your day on your number one priority for 90 days is just life changing, you know. But we didn't talk about that when we were together. But
it's a lot like the Richard Koch.
And that's another thing I got to watch. That was the great thing. So the three zones I was saying now, like you know, I'll call it the milking zone. in the morning where I'm producing milk, you know, the if I take my self-milking cow analogy, that I'm producing milk in the morning, and then the afternoons will be for people with any appointment, any interaction with my team, with any, you know, conference calls, teleclasses, recording podcasts, all of anything to do with other people will happen in that afternoon zone. And then what I really enjoyed was the evening zones of, you know, rather than watching TV or doing those things, I've been, you know, watching videos and just kind of like the learning zone. It's a beautiful
consumption,
rhythm.
The consumption.
It's consumption zone. And it's a beautiful rhythm.
The best time of the day is when you've exhausted all your willpower and energy. I actually feel tired at the end of the day, especially since I've incorporated vigorous exercise activity, like surfing.
Surfing every day, yeah.
I know that I have to take on my biggest challenges early because I don't feel that I have the energy at the end of the day. And I think that's probably healthy because when I go to bed, I'm actually tired and I don't use alarm clocks. And I don't,
yeah, me neither.
Don't have any, it's just very natural feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, those kind of zones as the building blocks of a perfect day. But you and I were talking about Lucy, about the movie Lucy.
Yes.
And the interesting thing, you know, I found it fascinating. Just the part where the whole relationship was time.
Yes.
And it kind of independently, you and I had to come to this kind of sort of similar approach to, like, you know, green line time. I was calling it, you know, I wasn't calling it green line time, but I was thinking about it in blocks, you know.
And I was thinking about it like a conveyor belt. It sort of plays on the ideas of goals and ambitions and the gap that we hear about. It's looking forward to things in the future, and like the goal is surely to place positive things on that conveyor belt that are coming towards you that you can look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you can have, if you could have only good things and then right. No bad things, time could slow down for you and it wouldn't be a problem.
Yes,
because you've always got something more
looking forward to
coming, and it's only good stuff. But when you've got, let's say, red blocks, like bad things coming that you have to do, like once a year I used to do all my own tax for about 2 days. I would tip all my papers out on this huge 1.5 by 1.5 meter table and spend 2 days going through my numbers once a year.
Uh-huh.
And I dreaded that, and I'd see that coming down the conveyor belt at
right.
me, and I could not looking forward to that. And so you actually spend time feeling not good about something even before you get there. So being able to remove that by instigating a system of bookkeeping and using,
it's funny how deadlines will do that
though. Deadlines do that.
I mean, the funny, you know, I saw the there was a graphic that had like a long line. It was an infographic of how projects get done. So it was like on the left end, you know, project assigned, and then on the far right end was deadline. Then it was divided into two parts with like 95% of the time from the left towards the deadline as open and, you know, marked as goofing off.
Yeah.
And then the last little 5% of the time, all the work done while crying. How projects actually work. All the work done while crying.
So it kind of fits in with the zone because you have a deadline first thing to get rid of the thing that's likely to require the most energy. Our mutual friend John Carlton reiterated the power of deadlines for me because it's what you have to install in your sales messaging is to have a requirement for something to happen. Otherwise, it's kind of open-ended and nothing does happen.
Right. Yeah, isn't that something? And, you know, I kind of love that approach. You know, it is kind of a relaxing approach to your day, knowing where to fit things.
My whole, you know, the clue in the word lifestyle is the style part. If you could actually style your life to have more green blocks coming down the conveyor belt and less red blocks, then, you know, your whole life is enjoyable. And like Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss.
Uh-huh.
You know, you, and I still have stuck to the side is your list.
I know I'm being successful when.
I know I'm being successful when. And that was a pivotal discovery when I found that, because that's when I wanted to question how things could be designed. And then another breakthrough was challenging myself to have a no technology day on Sundays. I started switch the computer off on Saturday and not turn it on until Monday.
Right.
And having had, even if it was minimal, you know, connectivity to the computer 7 days a week for a long time, it was a big assumption to push. But I managed to do that. And then I was able to use scheduling software to minimize the time that I was spending with other people just down to a couple of days a week.
Uh-huh.
And that's been one of the biggest changes of my routine.
Yeah, what was that one you said you were using?
The eventual solution I got was schedule once.
And that's, so I've been, I went from check appointments to time trade.
And I started with time trade, yeah. But I went to schedule once.
So you're saying you're better.
There's this weird thing.
I haven't evolved yet to that.
I'm saying that it's a peculiarity of my time zone because I'm Eastern Seaboard
right.
Australia.
Right.
We actually have Eastern Standard Time, and a lot of people in the US, Eastern Standard Time, were getting mixed up.
I gotcha, right.
Yeah, because they didn't realize it applies to other countries. Because actually our continent is the same width as the USA.
Right.
We have as many time
five
zones.
Time zones.
Heaps.
Oh, heaps of time zones.
Heaps of time zones.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, Sydney to Perth is like New York to Los Angeles.
Wow.
But there's so few people live here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the difference between schedule once? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, so one of the differences is it costs a little more. It seems to have a nicer interface. And we were talking the other day about how any software that looks nice is going to have a real advantage because it's more usable. But it also seems to handle the time zones better.
And you can have different length of time blocks.
Right? A little more customization. Right. You can let people choose between, say, you know, 10 minutes or 50 minutes or 30 minutes.
Uh-huh.
You can also tell it how you know, no surprise appointments. Like, don't let people book within 48 hours or 24 hours of an available spot.
Right.
And you can show them how much of your calendar you'd like them to see.
Yeah, gotcha.
So it's pretty customizable. But I'm using it really simply. I just have four main blocks a week. I have the morning on Wednesday and Thursday and the afternoon on Wednesday and Thursday. And here's one tip that I found is that by spreading my blocks really far apart, and I learned this from my mastermind, I used to have my calls sort of closer together, like 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved them. Actually, there were 10, 1, and 6. I moved them further apart to 9, 2, and 8. Mm. And by moving them further apart, it actually felt like I was doing a lot less because I had a huge amount of time in between to recharge, go and eat.
Well, like we went to a movie.
Go and see a movie between appointments. It's right. Like another day.
Yeah.
By the time I'm back.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like work. Sometimes at the end of the day when I'm doing my daily journaling, which is probably another really important thing both of us have in common, is that I'll sometimes think, gee, did I actually do anything today? And then I'll think, oh, yeah, I did an appointment then, and I did an appointment there, and I saw a movie.
Yeah.
And so I did actually do some value creation, or what you call milking.
Yeah, that's something.
Daily journaling's been a big thing for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
By reflecting each day on what I did, I'm holding myself accountable to an expectation that I've set. And one tool that I've used, because I'm primarily online-based, is Rescue Time. And it sends me a weekly summary of the number of hours I spent on my desktop and what I spent it on. And I have a minimum I actually have a maximum that I like to work to. So maybe I'm using it the opposite to the way that it was designed. I think it's designed primarily for employers to keep tabs on their staff and make sure they're working a minimum number of hours. But I like to have a maximum number of hours on the computer each week to feel that I'm in good shape, that I'm not getting out of priority.
That white X5 that we just drove by, that's exactly like mine. That X5M there.
Uh-huh.
White, same color.
Easily visible.
Yeah.
Except in the snow.
Yeah. Yeah, Tim Ferriss told me about rescue time. And Neil Strauss, he talked about this software or app that would completely block you out of the internet for a certain amount of time. I forget what it was called. He talked about, we did the podcast with him, and he was sharing that. I'll have to go back and check what that was. But that might be an interesting thing. I may use that to enforce my, 10:30 to 1 o'clock kind of blackout zone. Because honestly, it's like, I find being online is even if you're not going to do anything with the information or with it, it certainly plants a seed. Like, it can be a mind bomb. It could be something that, even whatever it is, it's a thought now that's an open loop in your mind when you're going into something.
Well, I think on a overview level, it's a habit.
Yeah.
People have this habit of, and like, if you were to take the computer out of the equation,
mm-hmm.
if you said, listen, I'm just going to walk into that room there and I'm just going to sit in a chair for the next 8 hours at that desk
mm-hmm.
in a pretty still position. I'm just going to sit there for 8 hours straight
mm-hmm.
with some toilet breaks and a snack in between. I'm just going to sit there at my desk and chair. Mm-hmm. It's a very unnatural thing to do.
Right.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So I like to make sure that I'm stepping away from there a lot, and also I'm employing some other devices like the stand-up desk, so that I don't.
I haven't gotten into that.
Feel like I'm sitting in that position, and also move
around. I don't have a desk per se. I mean, I have these Manhattan Club chairs from Pottery Barn that I've got everywhere.
I got quite often just set up on the couch or mm-hmm. on the kitchen breakfast bar with a stool. I like to move my environment.
I did too. So I've basically got a couple of different power positions, I call them, where it's like, so, and the thing is, they're totally portable too, right?
Yes.
So I've got the Focus at Will app on my iPhone, and have we talked about Focus at Will? I haven't told you about that. Okay. So this guy, Will Hensel, who I was just with him in Newport too. Do you remember the band London Beat?
No.
You'd remember their songs, but he was from London Beat, and he invented this app, this music streaming service, where the music is engineered to get you into habituation, or to keep you out of habituation. I don't remember whether it's good to be in or want to stay out of. Whatever it is, it gets you into a focused state in 5 minutes instead of 20 minutes, and helps you stay in that state for 3 to 5 times longer than you would naturally stay in it by, stimulating that part of your brain, the limbic brain. And so the music is like, great to listen to, and it's really something that I've noticed a big difference in the ability to focus. Like with, having ADD, it's difficult in any event. So I've had to come up with all these workarounds, like my golf analogy, goal, optimal environment, limited distractions, fixed time frame, that this is really, there's no discipline required, just push play and it helps. So it's like a no-brainer. But so with my app and my headphones, my power positions, which are totally you know, portable. So power position one is with my journal in one of my, you know, Manhattan Club chairs or in a comfy chair with an ottoman or not, but just sitting there thinking, journaling, that kind of thing. I'll do any kind of brainstorming, outlining, writing, all that stuff from that position. And then my second power position is anything when I'm online. It's Neil Strauss and I kind of work the same way, like lying down. I have a day bed in my office. I have this whole thing built into the wall. It's like a 9-foot-long day bed with all these pillows. And so I lay on my back and have my laptop on my chest. And that's the online position, you know? And then the recording or talking on the phone is I'll typically stand up and walk around or sit in the club chair when I'm recording things. So those three things, like if I look at no matter where I am while I was here, you know, my comfy chair in the comfy sofa in my condo that I got from Airbnb in your building there had, you know, a comfy sofa. So that was my position one, is sitting there looking out at the ocean and just a bright, quiet spot. So I had all that. And of course, then on the bed with my laptop. And so looking at those zones, you know, it's kind of easy to, they're portable. And it's just really knowing what you're gonna do in those times.
Yeah. I've noticed that if I put headphones on and play like techno or dance music,
yeah,
or dubstep, that's my product creation
right.
zone. I can really build keynote slides.
Yeah, it's interesting. That whole Focus at Will has all these different channels, right? Like you can have like some up-tempo, like they have chill, they have spa, they have...
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and so you get the music that fits your
I always have these visions of programmers and coders.
Yes.
And Facebook always got good headphones on.
Right. Well, that's the thing, because you lock into your zone, you know? And so there's something interesting about these zones now, about having that time to work on your most important priorities, is knowing what those priorities are.
Yes.
And
this is my sweet spot, passionate area, is that from my experience working with people struggling in the early phases of figuring out what that is, the answer is never whatever someone sent me in my inbox today, because that's the to-do list that other people add tasks to.
That's what Brendan Burchard says, that the inbox is a really super way for other people to prioritize your time.
Exactly. So, and this is where most people are diverting their attention.
Yeah.
Often first thing in the day. And inherently they'll end up having 50 browser windows open. They will have bought some product that they'll never consume, and they're on the next latest tactic. This is it's really an epidemic with people who aren't very, very clear what track they're on.
Yeah. And so I've been using WinStreak, the WinStreak app. Do you have that?
I think that...
Or maybe I told you about it.
I know WinStreak is a strategic...
Yeah, so it's Dan Sullivan's...
It sounds a lot like my daily post of what I did today.
You're in your forum.
Yes.
It's the same principle, right. Same principle that, so I end each day with that now, with the sort of looking back and marking my three wins for the day, and then thinking ahead to my three wins for tomorrow. I find that I'm so much, you know, better off, much higher likelihood that those three things will get done tomorrow if I've already thought them through today. And it's been an interesting thing, because, you know, as you know, I know I'm being successful when list starts out with my number one thing being I know I'm being successful when I can wake up every day and ask, what would I like to do today?
Yes.
Right. And now, so I think that I've I think I've evolved that to, I end each day by asking, what would I like to do tomorrow?
Right. It's an advance.
So that I know that I wake up with a plan for the day. And it's really funny, because when we've been talking about green line time and getting the most out of those days, like, I really see when you've got so much opportunity and so many things going on, so much wonderful stuff that you want to do, it's really the most, you know, powerful resource that I have is my time and attention. And so I look at that and I want to maximize that time, but do it with things that I really love. And so I've been playing around with this model of, you know, thinking about a perfect life and thinking about using like a movie metaphor for that, where you're, you know, you're creating this movie of your life, and that each day is a shoot, you know.
Yep.
And to have like, what are the scenes that we're gonna get today, and what
it's
are the
like the success of that mind movie style.
So I don't know much about that.
I think basically you make a movie of your perfect day.
Is Glenn in San Diego still, or are they here?
I think he flits between the two.
Okay.
So I've always used visualization. I'm really, really clear on what I would like things to look like. And, you know, the last thing I do before I switch off my tech every day is to look at tomorrow's schedule.
Yeah.
Or I'll write down on my whiteboard what I want to do first thing. And that's my one thing. If I can just keep on track,
yes,
then that moves the whole machine forward.
Yeah, that's really, it is interesting, because that whole, so Richard and I have been recording now, I think we have 5 episodes of A Perfect Life done, so this is, we're coming up on Labor Day weekend here, so this will be launched, you know, in September here. But a lot of the stuff that we have been talking about with A Perfect Life is looking at really kind of setting the context for a perfect life. So I've done a lot of thinking about what that means. Like, the reason we recorded a couple of like pilot episodes of A Perfect Life, and I can't tell you, like, everywhere I go, people are, when are you going to do that podcast with Richard, right? Because it was kind of like, it's the thing that people really love. And me too, because it's such a great thing. But what I wanted to have for it was a context. You know, like the I Love Marketing, we have the overriding context of before unit, during unit, after unit, and the 8 profit activators. So that's a container that everything fits in.
Yep.
And so we did a lot of thinking about the elements of a perfect life, like what are, you know, the equivalent of perfect life activators in a way, or what are the divisions. And so I've been playing around with different visualizations for that, or representations of it, and it sort of builds. And so what I looked at is, at the core, if you strip everything away, what you're left with is you know, the me division kind of thing. It's like, if you're just naked and you were taken away and dropped somewhere else, everything that you have internally, your body, you know, your physical body, your the skills that you have, the knowledge that you have, the, you know, whatever you've gathered up till now, is that me division, you know? And then the other kind of context that we have is, universally, we all have the same amount of time. So we've got the two standard things of the standard issue me, and then the same amount of time. You've got this renewable, non-replaceable, but renewable every day. You've got the time that everybody works with. So those two things are kind of the baseline, and I'll tell you the five, and then we can expand on them. So
good, because I'm champion.
Yeah, exactly. So so you know, you got me. That's what you're kind of the standard issue. What you're left with, you strip everything away. We've got our time, which are our 24 hours in the day. Then the three others now are largely constructs and how we choose to allocate our energy, our thoughts, our actions through time to work on or create a result in our environment, which is everything around us that we've chosen to add. So we've, you know, from where you choose to live, the kind of house that you live in, the car you drive, how you dress, what profession you've chosen, those are all environmental contexts that are very different. If you've chosen to be a missionary in India, is a different environment than choosing to be a hedge fund manager in New York City. That's an environment that you've chosen, and that's going to dictate a lot of how your time and energy gets allocated. If you've chosen to be a family where you've got, you know, a lot of kids and pets and all that stuff, that's an environment that's going to determine how some of your time and energy gets allocated. Then the next one is people, all the people that you've chosen to interact with. And that goes from your partner, from your family, from your extended family, your friends, your clients, the people that you choose to serve, or your boss or your coworkers, if you've got a job, your community that you live in, and humanity on the outer limits of that, right? That all the people, some element of your time and energy is going to be allocated to managing the extent of the people situation that you've created in your life. And then the fifth one is money. And all of that, you know, they're all kind of knobs and dials that all affect each other, right? Your environment is going to affect how much money it requires for you to live. Or maybe in some cases, it's the other way around. The amount of money that you have is going to dictate the environment that you get to live in. And realizing that beyond just you and your time, everything else is a factor of how you've chosen to.
That's why, for me,
those knobs and dials.
The word that's come up maybe 50 times there is choice.
Yeah.
For me, it sounds like choice would be a good thing, and tied to that is compromise. Mm-hmm. What level of compromise are you prepared to make?
Mm-hmm.
Because one of my mentors drummed into me about compromise, which is what led to me creating Own the Race Course. And we see it rising up. We were watching Kevin Smith yesterday, and he's vertically integrating distribution and reviews even in his marketplace, because he didn't want to compromise anymore.
Right.
So it was a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So environment really is a consequence of choice.
It is. It is,
and I think beyond a point. I mean, you could be born into
right,
an orphanage.
I was just
going to
say that people would say, well, what do you know, Warren Buffett, has, you know, very famously has said, if you are, you know, a reasonably healthy person born in the United States, you've won the genetic lottery.
Yeah.
And if you happen to be a man, it's even more of having won the genetic lottery. Now, and you know, that's
so there,
whatever
there
you choose on that, it's just, there is a gender bias, and there is,
it's like you were saying the other day, when someone was born in December, less chance of being a hockey star.
Right, that was Malcolm Gladwell's discovery, right? But yeah, if you want to be a pro hockey player, the best,
so there will
thing
be some environmental things that weren't your choice, but then it's what you do with
yes,
that.
Right. That's exactly it. So I think that most people, and for every tale of somebody saying, well, you know, their circumstances, you know, they can't get out of those circumstances, for every circumstance you can name, there's a story of somebody who has overcome those circumstances or more to become whatever they've chosen to become. So I am a big believer in choice, and I say that with just the slightest hesitance that I don't, because I'm super aware of not wanting to seem arrogant about that or uncaring about that, or do you know what I mean? I do firmly believe that you can choose to get out of any circumstance, and that is that's up for
it's definitely debate,
because there's certainly
it's easier circumstances for us to say that.
Yes, that's why I say it
like you're saying the other
with
day
with sensitivity that, I want to say that
the fish doesn't understand
water, right?
And so someone might not know that they have a choice, and I've seen an example of that. I've seen a 60-year-old mechanic break down and cry in a personal development workshop when someone asked him why he chose to be a mechanic, and the emphasis on chose, and he said, I didn't know that I could choose. He went to the mechanic school and then worked in a workshop, and that's what he did from the time he was a kid, and he didn't ever really think that there was the possibility to choose. And I don't think that's a mainstream concept. So one word that comes up for me a lot is think. I think about that when I'm talking to people about when they're training their team or when they're faced with a challenge. I think some people actually don't realize they can encourage thought or thinking, because people default back to society norms and a group thinking, where they're just going along with the flow.
Yeah.
The same impact for me when I go drive to the airport or something and I'm sitting in peak hour traffic. For a lot of people, that's so normal, they never question it. And I certainly question it. And it's a choice not to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. Dan Sullivan talks about this concept of immigrant thinking, that, immigrants, often you hear story after story of people immigrating and then becoming big successes. And, he said it's kind of like when you are an immigrant, you've left all of those other things. You've left I don't know what the right word is, but I'm
bias,
calling them like accessory or all the things,
codes,
the chosen things. Like what you immigrate with is you immigrate with your me unit and your time now and energy. But what you've left behind is the environment that you were in. You've left behind the people that you were surrounded by, and you may or may not have any of the money that you've left the money situation behind, or you've only come with the assets that you have, and so you've got this open future that's not dragged by your past. And so that kind of immigrant mindset, if you can intentionally look at that and choose to sort of symbolically immigrate and cut out,
It fits beautifully with my underlying maxim of question everything.
Right, right.
That's when you can really flip the lid. And if you were to look at people as relationships, that can also extend to other things like money and time. Oh. Your relationship to time. You know how some people seem to never have time, and then other people have all the time in the world?
Yeah.
But it's the same. It's because of their relationship with it. And exactly like money, some people have a better relationship with money.
Yeah.
So I like your model. For me, the flavors that come out are there's you, the body.
Yep.
There's
your body, mind, spirit. Yep.
Basically, there's you. There is your choices that you make from where you are now, wherever that is, whether you silver spoon in the mouth or hard up.
Yeah.
The choices you make could be good or bad. They can move you closer or further away from your ideal. And then there's your relationships with the relationships with time, the relationships with people, the relationships with money, and importantly, the relationship with yourself.
Yes.
Which sort of might sort of take the, that's one step past the me, is your confidence, your sense of values, and how honest you are about things.
Yeah.
And for most people, a big improvement in self-development would be to just look in the mirror and hold yourself accountable. Like, ask the big questions and have honest answers.
Yes.
Am I happy?
Right.
Am I doing good work? Is there something I would like to do that I'm holding back from?
Right.
What am I scared of that I could face?
Yeah.
And for me, one of the biggest revelations was only this year, was starting this brand new sport from scratch, and something I couldn't outsource. you've got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
But it's such a reflection tool. You learn about your fear, you learn about your persistence, you learn your strengths and weaknesses, your natural abilities have to improve and refine. So it's good to put yourself in a challenging or in a new or novice position from time to time, and that's probably what's happening with immigrants. They're starting from scratch,
position.
So they quickly scramble to use all their assets the best way possible.
And right.
I'm sure most of the Uber drivers you have are foreigners.
Yes, very true. That's very true.
They'll take the jobs that get them moving.
Yeah. It is interesting. I think, you know, things have changed with immigration. I mean, you know, geography is really largely irrelevant because your relationships and stuff really, your global community can come with you. And whether that's good or bad.
Well, it's in your iPhone now.
Well, that's what I mean. Your iPhone is really...
You're connected.
Yeah, you are connected. And so, here I've been traveling all over the world, but feeling connected with everybody. It really is like a global village because I come back to Sydney and I've got relationships here and have my favorite places here and the thing. So it's become very comfortable in this environment. And same with the UK. And, you know, the people, the ability to maintain those relationships with people has never been better, you know?
And
it's
kind of funny,
you said that the other day when I first arrived. It's kind of the tradition, you know, we have breakfast at the pantry. So I arrive, and literally that's where we ended the last time.
Yep.
And we were sitting there, and it's been a year. But we sat down and had breakfast, and it felt like we had just had breakfast last week, and no time had passed.
Because I think we have a different relationship with time than other people.
That's interesting. I like it. It's been a great week, though.
It's been a great week.
Yeah.
And the amount of things we have in common that we've arrived at independently is striking.
Yeah.
But I must say, some of it's not coincidence. Some of it was founded from my original interactions with you. Your focus on recurring income.
Yeah.
And on...
I remember that was almost 8 years ago.
It was probably 6 years ago.
Okay.
And maybe seven. And also your simple answer to... most of my questions was whatever I'd ask, you'd ask me, what result do I want? And so you actually gave me a thinking tool so that I could solve challenges quicker.
Mm.
That we shouldn't expect someone else to have all the answers. Mm. I think we possess most of the answers, but we need to be instructive enough with ourselves to pull the answers out.
Yeah.
So if we want to sit down and have that conversation, I think this all ties back to when we journal. And when we do good work and then we spend time consuming other stuff, we're keeping a nice relationship with progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is something. I mean, I do remember that conversation because we were at Jeff Johnson's in Detroit. That was the and I that is the thing that because I do remember that was my focused advice for you was recurring revenue is the thing. Like, so I look at, you know, my number two thing on my I know I'm being successful one is my passive revenue exceeds my lifestyle needs. And I'll tell you, that has been the, that's been the difference that's made all the difference, because that foundation is what sets the stage for being able to do every other thing.
Because you have no compromise.
Right.
It comes back to compromise, and you can bet that whoever is stuck in a slavery style situation is laden with compromise. Mm-hmm. And many of those compromises are created by their own choices.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it comes to things like debt.
Yes. That's the thing about leading, you know, that my passive revenue exceeds my lifestyle needs, rather than that the essence of that was to lead with revenue, lag with my lifestyle. And that was, whereas a lot of times, and there's no right or wrong, but some people get motivated by leading with the lifestyle and
backfilling,
forcing themselves to produce or to, you know, to stay in that.
Well, that's certainly a mechanism sales managers employ.
Get them hooked on the new car.
Drip, they call it.
The drip.
Get them on the drip.
Yeah.
You want to get them a nice big home mortgage.
Yes.
You want them in fancy clothes and jewelry.
Yeah.
And you want them in expensive loans and mortgages, because
now they have to produce.
Keep them working hard.
So they've created an environment that limits their choices. That's
exactly.
Yeah. Interesting, huh?
So one of the big clarifications for me is the relationship that you have with yourself is a good foundation to help you make better decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And being in tune with what makes you happy.
Well, understanding that's, yeah, when I look back, like that decision to really push the accelerator pedal forward in time and clearly define how I know I'm being successful so that I can experience it in the present. Having that, I know I'm being successful when, has really been the greatest guidepost for
all of it. It's a thinking tool.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's the bottom line. I remember at that same event, I shared with you a workflow that I had, and I didn't realize how much you pride frictionless living. Remember, yeah. I was showing you.
Yes.
It was PowerPoint to mind map to recording in like three easy keystrokes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's how we connected so well the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're just about at the airport.
I was just saying, look at this. This looks like the airport to me. Well, I had a great week, James. I always look forward to this week. You'll have to come experience the Winter Haven lifestyle.
I will.
Yeah.
Next time I'm east side, I'll pop over.
Yeah.
The evil scheme hatchery.
That's exactly right.
The double doors.
That's right. That's it. Well, thank you for your hospitality.
Thank you for it. It's been great.
These have become like a bright, shining light in my calendar.
Australia is
coming back next year.
Become richer for your involvement. I appreciate the support.
Awesome.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.